You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I gotta go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
I'm hoping that you dropped
so
in.
Very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like
my mother will start to
beautiful,
worry.
What's your
my father
hurry?
Will be pacing the floor.
Listen to that fireplace roar.
Really, I'd better scurry.
Beautiful, please don't hurry.
Maybe just to have a drink more.
I'll put some records on while I
the
pour.
The neighbors might think.
Baby, it's bad out there.
Say, what's in this drink?
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like starlights
to
now.
Break this spell.
I'll take your hat. Your hair looks swell.
I'd say no, no,
mind
no,
if
sir.
I'm moving
at
closer.
At least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense of hurting my pride?
I really can't say.
Baby, don't hold out.
Baby, it's cold outside.
Boys, take it from somebody who can teach you. There's instruction in that song. And welcome back to tonight's live broadcast of TPC this Saturday evening, November the 27th. We are getting into the Christmas spirit in a big way with this music tonight, and it'll continue all throughout the month of December. I want to thank again Glenn Allen for being on with us in the first hour. Second hour, Keith and I were breaking down the situation in Wisconsin with the Christmas parade and some parting shots on Charlottesville, and also Kyle Rittenhouse's post-acquittal actions. What we're going to be doing this hour, we're going to slow things down just a little bit. Because we've been so immersed in covering these three trials, which have now all reached their conclusion, we have not been able to read a lot of your correspondence. We've got a mountain of it. Pick just a couple. This one, you'll like this, Keith. I think it ties into our coverage tonight. And this is from Jim in Arizona, who writes, "Hi, James and Keith. First, I want to thank you guys for all you do for our people, always. TPC always puts me in a good mood, even when you're delivering unvarnished bad news. You both do it with humor and hope for change. Please never change. Never back down from speaking the truth." And Jim actually included a very nice gift for me, and I'm going to send you a nice thank you card this week. Our fourth quarter Christmas fundraising appeals will be mailed out to everybody. So if you're one of our regular contributors, be looking for that. Got a great incentive for you. And David Cole, the filmmaker, wrote it this year. So be sure to see what he has to say. This comes from a listener in Maryland. "Cozy fall weather and a great feeling to know that the folks at TPC continue to fight on the cultural front lines for the rights of European peoples." Well, that we do. And thank you all, ladies and gentlemen, for being part of our family, and especially at Christmas time when, as we said at the opening of the show, the sense of togetherness and our bond seems to be at its height. Well, we are going to have a fun and uplifting, hopeful, forward-looking month of programming in December. But we're not in December quite yet, are we, Keith? So Courtney from Alabama has been assigned over the course of the last couple of weeks of watching the Arbery trial while we were fixated on Rittenhouse in Charlottesville. She was doing the job that the men refused to do.
That Americans won't do. Yeah. Right.
And we're gonna bring her back on to offer a parting shot. I thought that would only be proper and appropriate because she has been watching that. And, of course, that's come to its conclusion as well, quite unfavorably from my opinion. But before we take it to Courtney, Keith, why don't you share with us your thoughts on the verdict there and –
Well,
in Georgia,
it is not as appealing as Rittenhouse, because these guys were out basically trying to protect property and possibly making a citizen's arrest, because people in the neighborhood had set up what was commonly known in the past as a neighborhood watch. They were part of it. They both had law enforcement backgrounds. They knew supposedly what the parameters were about use of deadly force. And again, like in Rittenhouse, Arbery grabbed the gun of Travis McMichael and tried to take it from him. And had he taken it from him, it would be reasonable to imagine that he would turn it on Travis McMichaels. Well, apparently this jury is either scared of the consequences of following the law, or they don't understand it, or they're a bunch of woke, leftists, and they are going to get to sock it to anyone on the right. But nonetheless, now the McMichaels and their neighbor, I think it's Fred Barnes, isn't it, or something?
That's not his name, but you're talking about...
We'll get that from Courtney, but basically they're going to spend the rest of their lives in a metal cage.
Now, this is interesting,
this is terrible.
Too. You mentioned that he was found guilty of murder as well for being with them and recording it. Now, he didn't. Anyway, well, let's actually take it to Courtney right now. Let's just, without further ado, let's go ahead and bring her back on. She's going to be with us for the following segment as well. We only have a couple of minutes left in this one, and I told her we'd get her to the end of this segment and then carry her over into the next segment. And we're going to wrap up this, and then we'll be done with it. But Courtney, I know Courtney, bless her heart, you know, she is somebody who really...
She loves us so much she endures Chinese water torture of watching a trial like this.
Well, she is somebody who wants justice to be served, and it pains her to see injustice, and she's gotten it in spades over the course of the last 3 days with these trials. But, Courtney, share with us an opening shot on this.
Sure. Gosh, there's so much I could say on this. I'll definitely go in more in depth in this next segment. but first of all, you know, as an opening statement, I am just beyond floored in disbelief at how most conservative white people are reacting to this verdict. I'm just getting the impression that they're celebrating this verdict. When you go online and look at comments underneath YouTube videos, and I know they censor comments, but still, I mean, it's like it does give an indication of what's going on. Like you see a bunch of comments where people are saying, I support the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict, and I also support this verdict, or I'm a conservative Republican man, or, you know, and I support this Arbery trial verdict. And I keep seeing comments like that. It disgusts me. And then also the way Fox News is ignoring the story, or they're celebrating it. Even Newsmax was that obscure news station that, you know, came to save conservatives, you know, when all the Trump fiasco was going on, when he was getting cheated out of the election. They were the ones that were, you know, that conservatives thought they could fall back on when Fox bailed out on everybody. But even Newsmax seems to be celebrating the verdict. And they had this one guy on Newsmax. I'm talking about Newsmax, not Fox. They had one guy on who was completely, you know, and this isn't a liberal, it was some guest on Newsmax who's supposed to be on the side of conservatives, and he was on there, you know. And it's not just people celebrating the verdict on our side, it's people who, I mean, when I say our side, I mean white conservatives, not us. But, you know, this guest who is supposed to be a white conservative, he was on there like completely fabricating the story of what happened, just like a liberal would. I mean, you know, going into, you know, I'm tired of how the narrative, how they keep repeating that, these men were on the hunt for this guy because he was black and they attacked him first. Where are you getting that from? Where are these people getting this from? I'm in disbelief. I'll talk more in the next segment.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Courtney from Alabama breaking down her reaction to this. We're going to actually have some facts for you as well when we come back. Courtney's doing a great job on this. We'll be right back.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
I gotta get home.
Baby, you freeze out there.
Say, lend me your comb.
It's up to your knees out there.
You've really been grabbed.
I feel when I touch your
but
hand.
Don't you see?
How can you do this thing to me?
It's bound to be tough tomorrow.
Think of my lifelong sorrow.
At least there'll be plenty of
time. If you got pneumonia and die,
I really can't stay.
You're over that old lock. Baby, it's cold.
That took a lot of convincing.
You know, it's a song that's true to life. Of course, she gives in at the end, but we live in an inverted reality, or at least they are trying to invert reality.
No, he would be arrested in jail for sexual harassment today.
Well, anyway, back to the case in Georgia. I want to bring forth some facts, and I'm going to do that after reading this very... quick note that we received another one. We got to get back to reading the mail. Dear James, couldn't believe my eyes when I opened the package to find three books, a CD, a DVD filled with important information and ideas that are suppressed or discouraged by the mainstream. And of course, the very first thing I did was open the front cover of your book, praying you had signed it, and found that you had. Thank you for being so thoughtful and generous with your resources and time. Y'all are helping people all over the world. Your positivity and bravery inspires others and gives them the courage to keep going. That comes from Katie in Maryland, who is a new listener, who wrote in a very nice piece of correspondence. Then we sent her a gift package. We reach new people every day, and we're thankful for the opportunity that you, our audience, have given us to do just that, especially when we're tackling these all-important topics and situations. Well, again, to quote the great Sam Dixon, he sent me some facts of this case, which I shared with Courtney, that was... presented during the opening arguments of the Arbery McMichaels trial. Here are some facts. Arbery had been caught on film. We read this last week, but I'm going to read it again. It's short for the point of emphasis. Arbery had been caught on film four times entering the house at night, not jogging. The Arbery was walking into the house a fifth time on the day of the shooting, and he only ran after a neighbor spotted him. When that happened, he didn't jog. He sprinted away. Arbery had acted like he had a gun in a previous confrontation with Travis McMichael, and this was reported to the police at the time, weeks before the day of the shooting. McMichaels had lost sight of Arbery on that fateful day, were parked waiting for the arrival of the police, whom they had called when Arbery ran around a corner and charged their truck and then charged Travis McMichael. There's actually more evidence, more fact, that they were going for the gun, or that Arbery was going for the gun, even than what had happened in the Rittenhouse situation. So again, when you compare and contrast these things And you look at how the media was treating the situation in Wisconsin with the massacre at the Christmas parade. Journalism, these journalists are beyond redemption. They are beyond the depths of the depravity of humanity. And what has the precedent has been said here, I think, Keith and Courtney, is that now if you are white and a black man is reaching for your gun, you'd better give it to him and just find out what he intends to do to you after that. Because if you defend yourself, you're going to jail for the rest of your life. And Kyle Rittenhouse would have gone to jail for the rest of his life if those people had been black. I guarantee you that. And then, of course,
I've always wondered this about Kyle Rittenhouse. Remember, Jump Kick Man was black. He shot at him and missed him. If he had actually shot and killed Jump Kick Man who was attacking him, I wonder whether he would
he'd be in jail. He'd be gone, and the president in Charlottesville.
And is that the only difference between these cases, or is it?
Yes.
Of course, the defendants in this case look like they were extras in the movie Deliverance, but at least they did. But see, that's what they want. They were right from central casting for the left. But see, is it just down to race now? That, you know, basically black people have become what the Hindus would call a sacred cow in America.
It still comes down to the jury. And I've talked with Courtney about this a lot in the last couple of weeks. The jury is so disappointing. The cowardice on display here. The lack of what we've been talking about.
Well, the lack of racial solidarity, which blacks always have. Like, for example, there was this case in Texas where they caught a guy from Africa, a black guy that was a serial murderer.
We're gonna talk about that
of
next.
People. But they had one black person on the jury, and that person hung the jury up.
We'll talk about that next.
Convict. But then on this case, you had 11 white people and one black person. Not one of those white people stood up for the
minority. Racial solidarity is fine. If it had been murder, they should go to jail. I don't care about that. If a white guy shoots a black person and it's murder, you gotta convict him. But that wasn't the case here. They did it because they were scared, and it's reprehensible. Courtney, back to you.
Well, I don't fully blame the jury. I mean, there's a lot of talk that the judge misled them in the instructions, that he basically, I listen to Andrew Branca a lot. I'm sure Keith knows who he is. He gives his analysis, his legal analysis on all these cases. Very right wing. I love him. But he said that the judge was supposed to read the instructions on citizen arrest law, that was in the way he was supposed to read it would have benefited the defense, but instead he quote unquote punted it to the jury to figure out for themselves. And so, you know, like I said before, I can't really tell if this judge was fair or favoring the prosecution. There's a lot of talk back and forth on that. And the defense, you know, I spent a lot of time talking about them, the defense attorneys, for the most part, you know, I thought they did pretty good. There was one, you know, with what they had to deal with, I thought they did a good job. There was one that was quite a character, and he probably said things he shouldn't have said because it drew attention, the media's attention to what he was saying instead of the content of the case. And, you know, the defense attorneys were right in this case. So, but overall, I thought they did a good job. The two men, the two defense attorneys for Travis, McMichael, were wonderful. There was a husband and wife team for Greg McMichael that I thought were wonderful. They both did great. The wife made excellent closing statements for the case. And then Mr. Roddy Bryan's defense attorney was Mr. Kevin Goff, and he got picked on a lot for things he said, but overall I thought he did a good job. But one thing I do want to say, and I have to say this before it's all over, as a female, you know, I have to say this, you know, we can talk about how well the female defense attorney did and everything, and she did do a good job. But, you know, obviously everybody on our side, or most of us, we all agree that, you know, a woman's proper place isn't, you know, acting as a defense attorney. She should be a mother, and, you know, we've all talked about it. We know a woman's proper role. But there was one point during this case where her proper role as a woman came out, and it touched my heart more than anything else I saw her do in the courtroom. When that judge was reading those terrible verdicts, I saw the female defense attorney, I saw her reach over and put her hand on Mr. Greg McMichael's arm. And You know, I mean, liberals and the left, I'm so sick of how they treat white men. They act like white men don't deserve any empathy. They don't have feelings. You know, these three white men standing there having to hear the rest, you know, hear about the rest of their lives getting ruined just in one sentence from the judge or a few sentences from the judge. The rest of their lives are ruined. And the media is making fun of it. And people in comment sections on YouTube are making fun of, oh, look at the looks on their faces. You know, and white men, it's like liberals just love trashing them. Like they can't show empathy. They don't have feelings. I mean, this is terrible. And it just touched me as a woman when I saw that female defense attorney. She did her role at what a woman should have been doing in that moment. She reached over and she put her arm on Greg McMichael and comforted him. And it's like, I wish I could have been in the courtroom just to comfort somebody. It's terrible. And I just want to get that last word in, you know, before I were to say anything else.
Well, I like those comments though, Courtney, because I think we need to all realize that white males are the new kulaks, KULAKS, of the world. Kulaks were supposedly bourgeoisie farmers, people that would hire people to work on their farm, and they were the ones primarily persecuted by the Bolsheviks in the Soviet Union in the 1920s. That's what we're looking at as white males in today's America in the 2020s.
All right, hold on right there. We're going to take a break. We're coming around the home stretch. Two more segments to go, and this our Thanksgiving weekend installment of TPC. So, Courtney, hang on the line. I'm going to ask you something during the break here, and we'll be right back for everybody else. Stay tuned.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The new COVID variant found in South Africa is sparking fear in investors. The Dow at some points on Friday dropping over 1,000 points. The S&P and NASDAQ are deep in the red as well. This comes as global travel restrictions start to kick in because of the highly contagious variant. As far as if the United States should consider travel restrictions, Fox News medical contributor Dr. Mark Siegel says,
we've gotten that wrong ever since the beginning of the pandemic when Donald Trump, you know, called for the restrictions on China. I say yes to that. Why would we travel to and from South Africa right now while we are trying to figure this out?
That variant not yet in the United States, as U.S. scientists are working with those in South Africa to study the emerging variant. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn-Root. There are two things that I care about. I'm always working on my health and fitness, and I care so much about preventing illness. And that's where vitamin D comes in. Vitamin D is also known as the sunshine vitamin. How do you know if you have low levels of vitamin D? Most people don't. Sons of Liberty, our regular sponsors of CBD, have been working with a group of scientists to create this patent-pending spray vitamin. Five sprays contain a whopping 15,000 IUs of vitamin D3. It's instantly in your bloodstream, providing amazing protection against illness, and the taste is amazing. Protect yourself and your loved ones this season with this great-tasting vitamin D3 spray from Sons of Liberty. For my listeners only, go sonsofliberty.com is offering a discount of 15% off every product when you use the code WAR15 at checkout. Please support veteran-owned, service-disabled, small business. Go sonsofliberty.com. Make the healthy choice and choose go sonsofliberty.com. Use code WAR15 to get up to 15% off. Go sonsofliberty.com.
On this Black Friday, the Better Business Bureau is putting out its annual list of tips to make sure people are getting the best value for their money. The agency is suggesting you do your research before purchasing a product. That includes taking a close look at reviews, also signing up for email alerts from your favorite retailer so you don't miss out on any opportunities to save. AAA also warning people when they're out shopping that thieves are also out in abundance as well. Doug Shoup from AAA has some advice on how you can keep you and your new purchases safe.
Lock their car doors and close their windows. Don't leave the vehicle running anytime you're not in it. Never leave belongings or purchases in plain view from outside of the vehicle. Park in populated, well-lit areas, and never hide a spare ignition key on the vehicle.
That audio courtesy of KABC 7 in Los Angeles. President Biden with nothing on his schedule today. USA Radio News.
Have a merry Christmas. Christmas. Have a merry Christmas. Have a merry Christmas to you. Have a merry Christmas to you. It's a merry Christmas. The Christmas lights arrive. I'm gonna spend this Christmas with my lady tonight. We'll have a little eggnog and a Christmas candy cane. And Christmas kiss my baby again and again. Have a merry Christmas. Have a merry Christmas. Have a merry Christmas.
We have
what group was that? Now that's a real trivia question.
Now you know, even I don't know the answer to that. I will tell you that we received that clip from a man who has had quite an impact on the show this year, Rick from South Brooklyn, and Rick made his debut. Been a long time listener, years and years and years listener, and financial supporter of the program. And we got to meet Rick for the first time in South Carolina when we went down there in the summer for that remote broadcast. And he was there, and we just had a great weekend with Rick. And he popped on the show and just generated quite a bit of feedback. He was on with us for a couple of segments. And then he reappeared on the show on our anniversary broadcast back in October a few weeks ago. But he sent that to me. And he's right. He said these doo-woppers, you know, back up in the New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia area, a lot of them were mobbed up. He said they'd be the toughest guys on the block. They'd put you in a concrete boot in the day and then go out and do the concert.
Look at the Four Seasons, right?
And but boy, they had the voices of angels. I tell you, that's you know how much I love doo-wop. So if you get Christmas music and doo-wop, you get a little synthesis there. You know, it kind of lessens the sting of some of the news we've been covering in recent weeks. But hey, want to thank Courtney from Alabama again for being with us. I mean, she's always been a long time friend of the program and has made intermittent appearances for
I always make sharp and incisive almost comments on these matters of current event importance.
She's been with us the whole run, but the last 3 weeks she has been watching, and the only one of us that has been watching the Arbery trial quite intensively, and really appreciate her calling in the last 3 weeks to weigh in on that. Didn't want to wrap up our commentary on that without offering her one more invitation. So there she was. So anything else you want to say? I mean, these guys looks like they're going to do the rest of their lives in prison. It's really tragic to me. I mean, I do think it was self-defense. Look, if you could say they didn't need to follow him, they did call the police. But again, a citizen's arrest, that's something that goes back a millennia in Anglo-Saxon law. You're talking about, hey, if a guy goes for your gun, you have to give it to him. Is that the precedent that's now been set? And then for me, my father was over at my house on Thanksgiving. I'm the father of a son. To see a father and son going to be forever separated and do life in prison, they didn't premeditate. It wasn't premeditated that they go out. And I saw the headlines, the three white men who killed a black man while he was out for a jog. I mean, it's just totally fictitious narrative. That's not what was going on. And yes, Arbery didn't deserve to die, and I don't think they would have killed him if they didn't think that their life was in danger.
Well, they wouldn't have killed him if he had not grabbed his gun, okay? They were trying to make a citizen's arrest. Well, guess what? They didn't have police forces in England until 1828, when Sir Robert Peel created the Bobbies, named after him, the police when they had in
this
urban
is
areas.
A good point. Police and hospitals didn't exist until very recently in the history of the West.
In fact, the blowback or the opposition to Sir Robert Peel's proposal for this new type of police force was, have British men become so effeminate they can't defend themselves and their families? That's what they expect. They expected men to defend their families and their children and themselves, and to make citizens' arrests. So it may sound like it's, you know, something that is off the wall or crazy or off the chart to modern people, but that's part of our judicial heritage. And these men were acting in the way that men were supposed to act for time in memoriam in England and in the West.
And now, again, they could have been home for Thanksgiving had justice been served. Unfortunately, they'll be forever separated.
They couldn't have afforded a turkey.
Tragic. You know, it's just tragic. But this is you brought up another point that I think we were going to miss otherwise. And I have read some things about this, but I don't even think I've read a complete article. But there was another case that you mentioned. I believe it was in Texas. What can you factually tell us about that?
Well, there's a case in Texas. His name is something with a C. He is a African immigrant, black guy, who'd come to America and is a serial murderer. He specializes in murdering old white women. And he was being tried by a jury of 11 whites and one black. The one black person hung up the entire jury, so they had a mistrial and they're going to have to try it again. On the other hand, compare that to the jurors in the McMichaels trial, the one in Atlanta, where you had 11 whites and there was nobody there that would stand up and say, this is not the way it's being portrayed. There is a right to make a citizen's arrest, just like there's a right to bear arms and there's a right to protest. And as a result of that, because of the cowardice or the wokeness of the people on that jury, these men are going to be unjustly imprisoned for the rest of their lives. Everybody can say it's improvident of them to go out there and confront a potential burglar. They could say the same thing about Kyle Rittenhouse. It was improvident of him to go up there to Kenosha, Wisconsin, and go out armed on the street. But guess what? They have constitutional rights to do all of those things, both the McMichaels and Kyle Rittenhouse. He has a right to bear arms, and bearing arms, that doesn't mean you keep it locked in your gun safe at home. You have a right to go around armed. That's what the Second Amendment was about. You couldn't be arrested just because they caught you walking down the street with a gun.
Now, interestingly, Tennessee, of course, just within the last few months, is an open carry state. You don't even have to have a permit anymore.
I know, but you just wait and see what happens.
If you actually use it and run afoul of the narrative, if you use it as self-defense against a minority, you're going to go to jail forever. I mean, I think that's what's being established
now, here. If you shoot a white person, you'll probably get a medal.
Yeah, you'd probably, if it was in self-defense, the law would still apply, but it doesn't. It is not going to apply here because I think it's just the concern the jury has.
Kyle Rittenhouse is very lucky he did not connect and actually shoot Jump Kick Man.
If they had acquitted McMichaels and their neighbor, number one, Georgia would have burned. It would have been the Sherman's March would have been reconstituted, and do you think these jurors trust the system to keep their names confidential and anonymous?
Look, it doesn't matter. That's what has happened since Dylann Roof. Basically, white people are having to come to terms with the fact, and particularly these so-called normies, that it doesn't matter how scrupulously you bend the knee to political correctness. If you're a white person, you're a bad person. And there's no, you can run, but you can't hide. And that's what they're going to have to learn.
You'd still like to think that there would have been one that would have at least hung it up. I mean, then it would have been another case like Della Beckwith where you just get, they're going to get tried and tried and tried and tried and tried. But, yeah.
And again, look, Rittenhouse is not written off, okay? No pun intended.
Oh, he's still got
federal charges by Merrick Garland's Department of Justice to face, probably. He'll also have civil suits to face, probably. He doesn't have a pot to pee in or a window to throw it out of, as they used to say down here in the South. He's not a wealthy person. He's going to be money whipped just like the Charlottesville defendants, unless our judicial system grows a pair of cojones and holds people at bay that want to use the legal process to abuse process.
Rittenhouse, of course, doesn't have any money being a kid. However, establishment conservatives, respectable conservatives, so-called, have embraced him. And so his mother was able to raise millions of dollars for his defense as well through the Republican Incorporated, Republican or Conservative Inc. apparatus. But I want to be clear here, too, what I'm saying.
But on the other hand, if he had killed Jump Kick Man, I doubt that he'd have that support.
And that's the fault of the jury. No, he wouldn't have. We've said that, too. He wouldn't have had the support. None of them. Donald Trump Jr., all of these people that are, Rittenhouse met with Donald Trump himself, the president, a few days ago. None of those people would have touched him had the bullet hit a black rioter who was doing the exact same things, reaching for the gun. We saw that in Georgia. And I'm not saying, but by no means, and I shouldn't even have to say this, but in case there's any confusion. I'm not saying whites should be able to go out and just shoot whoever they want. I mean, obviously not.
Or blacks, or anybody.
Or anybody, but I watched these cases and followed them as well as anybody. They were televised. And I can make an opinion. I can come to a conclusion based upon the evidence that was presented in court just as well as any other juror. And in my opinion, it was not murder. It was self-defense in the case of Arbery and the McMichaels. And I'm sad that Arbery's dead, but it's just like the situation in Charlottesville. I'm sad that these people put themselves in the situation where there could be violence. And I'm talking about the people who may have been injured in Charlottesville being there.
See, they have a First Amendment right to be there, and Rittenhouse and the McMichaels had a Second Amendment right to bear arms.
That's right. Well, they used to. I think that this is what we're talking about. That precedent is changing now.
The fat lady hadn't sung yet. The Supreme Court hasn't ruled on it, and I hope it does go all the way to the Supreme Court, and we'll get some clarity on these matters.
We'll be right back.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Maka is the thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day. That's the island greeting that we send you from the land where palm trees sway. Here we know that Christmas will be green and bright. The sun will shine by day and all the stars at night. Melukaliki Maka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you, girl.
Melukaliki Maka is the thing.
Well, that's one of these Christmas movies, one of these more contemporary Christmas movies. Christmas Vacation with Chevy Chase. That's Randy Quaid in that movie, Cousin Eddie and all that. That's one of a good one. That back when comedy was actually funny. We talked about that with Jack Ryan last week.
Let me ask you this. Who is the bigger star, Dennis Quaid or Randy Quaid?
Probably Dennis, I'd say. I mean, they're both, you know, they're... Yeah. Right. Mr. Producer came in unequivocally with Dennis.
It's like Tommy Smothers and Dickie Smothers. Mama was like you best. Randy is a character actor and Dennis is a leading man.
Well, but they've both been in a lot of movies. Both have certainly made a very comfortable living in motion pictures. So, and that's something. But that's like asking who's the bigger star, Bill Murray or his brother, Brian Doyle Murray.
Never heard of Brian Doyle Murray.
He's been in movies, but not like Bill. But that's what we were talking about with Jack. There was a time when comedy used to be actually funny. Now it's just mocking and ridiculing whites and things like that. But our audience has a sense of humor. We got a contribution recently from a listener in California. I like to call our California listeners part of our international audience. But he sent in a check for $36.98, and it was for in honor of Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was born in 1821 and died in 1877. 1821 plus 1877, $36.98. So a thoughtful contribution, and it's contributions like that that have kept us going for almost two decades. Can you believe it? Okay. Hey, speaking of contributions, I will say this one more time. Check your mailbox, folks, this week before our next show. You're going to receive something that you're going to read. You're going to want to read. So please read it and let us know what you think. And that being said, Keith, we have but a portion of one segment remaining. Bring it all to a close for us. What do we got left in the tank tonight?
I want everybody to think about the concept of lawfare, legal actions, both criminal and civil, as warfare. Where did this begin? I propose that it began in the civil rights movement when cases like Sweat versus Painter to integrate Texas law schools, Shelley versus Kramer, which struck down restrictive covenants in residential deeds, and Brown versus Board of Education that said that the policy of separate but equal was no longer constitutional under the 14th Amendment. Well, let's look at the Brown decision, which is the most prominent one of those. How was that decision reached? Well, the way that due process says that you decide cases on appeal is by stare decisis, case precedent, and if you're interpreting either a statute or a constitutional provision, you look at legislative history. Well, the plaintiffs, the people that wanted change, struck out on both of those things. The precedent was Plessy versus Ferguson, and that absolutely answered the question that separate but equal satisfied the 14th Amendment. Then you go to legislative history. That's what they got Philip Ellman to do with one of his law clerks. He was a former law clerk of Justice Felix Frankfurter, who was the mastermind behind the decision in Brown versus Board of Education. He looked into it, and he found that the same Congress that passed into law the 14th Amendment also created a racially segregated school system in the District of Columbia at the same time. So they obviously did not think that racially segregated schools violated the 14th Amendment. So, being cut off on those two traditional ways of deciding the case, what did they do? They based the decision on some half-baked sociology paper prepared by a black professor, Kenneth Clark, his so-called doll studies. And even that was dishonestly presented to the court.
But even, at least with that, as ridiculous as it is, at least they tried to base it on something. Now they don't even try to qualify. Try to have a reason. They just do what they want to do.
Well,
because they can get away with it.
They did the same thing they did to you, James. They based your decision not on the law, not on stare decisis, not on legislative history, but instead on Aesop's fables. Well, the New York Times reporting on the Brown decision said this is a decision based on sociology, not law. So everybody recognized it. This was a usurpation of judicial power to basically do something that should have fallen in the purview of the legislature. They didn't want to wait for the legislature to strike down segregation. So they got the judiciary to do it. And the judiciary has been usurping powers from the executive branch and the legislative branch with impunity ever since.
That's a great point. It was supposed to be the weakest of the three branches of government. Now it's weakest, really the only one whom, that, well, that matters.
That's why you elect a president, because you want to know who he would appoint to the Supreme Court, because they're going to have the last word on everything. And again, idea of judicial review of constitutionality being within the ken of the Supreme Court, again, the Founding Fathers would have argued vociferously that that was not the case. They said that's why Brutus, Alexander Hamilton, described the proposed federal judiciary as the weakest and least dangerous branch of the federal government, having neither strength nor will, only judgment.
This is something that conservatives have put forth that have kept them on the Republican plantation for all of these decades, is that, well, we got to have the Supreme Court. Well, Trump was able to put in how many justices? And it hadn't done a bit of good.
Not one of them voted to review the election that was stolen from him.
Well, not only that, that's just one case. There have been two or three other very important cases, or at least cases of importance to conservatives, that you would think a conservative so-called Supreme Court would rule in their favor on. But people like Amy Coney Barrett and the others have just basically done...
They're missing in action.
Well, they've done as somebody like Souter would have done.
The Democrats can depend on their liberal candidates being good card-carrying liberals and bringing that into court deliberations and in appellate decisions. On the other hand, the Republicans have been appointing the majority of the people sitting on the Supreme Court basically since Nixon, and every one of them has turned out to be a flake. Every one of them has turned out to be a traitor to the cause of conservatism, except for Scalia and Justice Thomas and, to some degree, Samuel Alito.
Of course, the best that we had was Scalia, who passed away under unusual circumstances, of course. But yes, this whole thing, the conservative, so-called, we have to say, and I don't even know what a conservative is anymore. That was another thing. 10 years ago, I would have said, yeah, I'm a conservative.
A person that has ideas that fall in line with the traditions of their nation.
I know what it's supposed to mean.
Well, that thing is, that's what, but see, the big problem we have today is that conservatives want to preserve liberalism. Brad Griffin has written a great article about that.
They exist to conserve the victories of the left. And this goes back to these supposed conservative Supreme Court justices. They still got to get to the right cocktail parties. Yeah, that's important.
And, you know, they want to be considered good people by the ruling elite, the moneyed elite, and they're all left-wing. So that's the way they come down in their decisions. And their basic flaw is that they believe still that the civil rights movement was not just another liberal egalitarian movement to destroy America. They think it's holy and righteous. And when you let that camel's nose in the tent, you've lost your tent, my friend. You cannot do it.
The camel's taken over. Well, anyway, folks, with only a minute or two remaining, hope you've had wonderful Thanksgiving weekend. Going to have a fun Christmas season together. Keith had a good Thanksgiving. Ole Miss won the Egg Bowl.
Yeah, but I'm suffering indigestion now as a result of all the food I ate. I tell you what, if every day was Thanksgiving, I'd have to get a job as a fat man in the circus.
It was good, though, was it not?
It was, yeah. Nothing like cornbread dressing, is there, James?
Well, corn casserole.
Corn casserole. That's
probably my favorite side.
What about asparagus casserole?
No, I'm not going anywhere near that.
Green vegetable.
My wife does a great apple bourbon turkey. It's just fantastic. We had a really good spread over here with
now, how much bourbon did you waste on that turkey?
Well, the turkey was drunk. You know, you got to get a turkey drunk before you put him in the oven. It's the right thing to do.
It's like that baby, it's cold outside.
But he did taste good. I mean, of course, the bourbon, it adds some flavor, but you can't taste it. I mean, there's no alcohol content in the finished turkey, but whatever the ingredients, and I don't even know how much the bourbon plays in the final taste, but the ingredients come out just right. She does a great job. Well, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. And these trials are behind us now, so maybe we can focus on something a little bit more happy. For Glenn Allen, our great guest tonight, Courtney from Alabama, our production team in Utah and Florida. For Keith Alexander, I'm James Edwards. Good night, everybody. Talk to you next week.
Arrivederci, baby.